morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. It's probably safe to say that Minnesota does not have a national reputation as really being a hotbed of basketball excellence. Usually people think of a state like Indiana or perhaps Kentucky, certainly the playgrounds of New York City when they think of great basketball. But that really is not the case when it comes to college basketball. The University of Minnesota Golden Gophers, year in and year out, have ranked among the top teams in the nation. Last year, after a slow start, they rallied at the end of the season to win the National Invitation Tournament. 2 years ago, you'll recall, the Gophers went all the way to the NCAA Final Four. This year, they've started their season undefeated with another game coming up Friday night at Fresno State. Joining us this hour is the man perhaps most responsible for this long run of excellence, college basketball's 1997 Coach of the Year, Gopher basketball coach Clem Haskins. And we sure invite you to join our conversation today. If you've always had a question for the coach, never had a chance to ask it, give us a call, 227-6000, Twin City area number, 227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828. 227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Coach Haskins, thanks for coming in today.
It's my pleasure being with you.
I really appreciate it. Now, I see the Star Tribune at the beginning of the season predicted that by the end of this year, you folks are going to end up in the top 10 this year. Would you agree with that assessment, or are they being overly optimistic?
Well, a long time ago, I stopped reading papers a long time ago, and just go out and just try to do the best you can, because you never know what these guys are going to write about. But the most important thing is we feel we do have a good ball club, and it's going to take some time for us to gel. We're not a top 10 ball club today, a top 20. Our goal is to get there. For the years, I was working hard towards those goals. Most important thing I think we need to do is just improve every day. We step on the court and practice through games, and we have a nice nucleus of young players to work with, to blend with three seniors and Miles Tarver, Quincy Lewis, Kevin Clark, and actually four with Jason Stanford. So and those three guys I mentioned first will be starters majority of the season. But we like what we're doing, and we like the group of guys we're working with.
When you first came here in 1986, we were talking about how great the program is today. Certainly wasn't the case in 1986. I think it's not an overstatement to say that things were in a shambles. Some of the athletes had been charged with serious crimes. It just looked like the entire program was out of control, falling apart. Why in the world did you come here and want to get involved in that?
Well, you know, I asked myself that several times that first 2 years, why did I take this job? Because I left a program at Western Kentucky University at that time was good enough to compete for a national title, and they went on to win 31 basketball games that year, and we lost to a couple ball games and got beat by Syracuse, which runs up to Indiana on the way to the NCAA tournament. But again, you know, I'm a guy that love a challenge, I think, and I'm driven to try to be. I'm a builder, number one, of young men and programs, and I rebuild a program at West Tech University, and I felt like that, you know, and I my decision I made, basically, I think God direct me and all my decision, and he was probably the gentleman, I guess, a person you would refer to that probably directed me here. I followed his lead because the program was down, and I retired from pro ball in the fall of 76, and no way I'd ever plan on ever leaving Kentucky. That's my home. I was born and raised there, and at West Kentucky University, only 70 miles from my farm. And I truly enjoy my farm, going back and with my cattle, my dog, and et cetera, on the farm and doing that. But, you know, I think I just listened to a couple people here and talking, and I finally make a decision to come here. I think God directed me to come to Minnesota.
So in the first couple of years were kind of rough. I think if memory serves, the Gophers lost, 21 straight Big Ten games. But then, gosh, just 3 years after you came here, you're in the NCAA tournament, knocking on the door of the Final Four. How did that happen?
Well, you know, we brought in my first year here. We recruited seven players, and seven of those guys stayed with us the whole time. And Kim Zirk was the only guy who actually just graduated. He was a junior college player, and five of those guys stayed with us for the 4 years, and all of them have a degree today. And that same group of guys, though, had lost over 40 ball games the first 2 years. They turned it around and won 43, 44 ball games the last 2 years. We went to Sweet 16 and to the Elite Eight. And it's amazing what you can do when you just have great work ethics and people with character and with class. They work hard and will listen to coaching, will take coaching, and you have a great staff. You accomplish great things. So basically, that nucleus at Ball Club, those five, six guys have been with me from day one. We added a couple players the next year with Kevin Lynch and Bob Martin and Walter Barr and Bob Metcalf, that group of guys. And that same group of guys with Richard Coffey and Cornell Lewis and Willie Burton and Jim Chikanjanski, Melvin Newman, Mario Green, that group of guys really is the heart and soul of this ball club today. They had character and they had class, and they was the guys responsible for helping rebuilding this program with the great assistant coaches along the way with the Milton Barnes and guys like Larry Davis and Bill Brown we have now, and Al Brown and Silas McKinney, Dan Kosmoski, who was the head coach at St. Olaf, help us rebuild this program. Dave Thorson is also a guy I had to add in there. So all the coaching staff with the players help us rebuild this program, and today we do have one of the top 25 programs in the country. I'm very proud of that.
You have been pretty critical of late of the college basketball game in general. On the one hand, college basketball wildly popular. Yours is probably the toughest ticket in the state of Minnesota to get. NCAA Final Four revenues continue to soar every year, and yet you see some problems with the game itself.
Well, the game itself, I love this game, and I owe all the material things I have through being able to participate in this game as a player, rewarded as a pro player, and now coaching. And I hate to see people have disrespect for this great game of basketball. And that's why we have a discipline program at the University of Minnesota. A young man should put the shirt tails in. They should tie their shoes up. They should look appropriate when step on a basketball court. To me, playing is one thing, but you can always look the part. Everybody can't make jump shots. Everyone cannot be a Michael Jordan. But the most important thing, they sure can look as well, look better than those guys in their dress and their appearance and how they conduct themselves. The AAU program in the summers, AAU program, nothing wrong with the AAU program. They're great. It's the people that's involved with the summer programs that I call them leeches now, that are really controlling the game, particularly the blue chip athletes out of inner city, that you must go through those guys in order to get in touch with that young man. No longer the high school coach have any control. And that's the thing that I want to see put back in the high school, where the high school coach any control and the high school themselves, not I call leeches outside that's taking a buck from a shoe company here or there to represent that young man. It all leads to a blue chip player. It's not about him going to college. It's about him being able to make money down the road, to sign a big deal with a shoe company or sign a pro contract. That's how those guys are getting rewarded. And you have runners out there are trying to pimp these kids. And that's the thing that I'm concerned about. I'd like to see cleanup before I requit.
There has been concern about gambling in college basketball, point shaving and the rest. Is that a big problem or just a few isolated incidents that have come up?
Well, at the present time, you can say it's an isolated incident. But when there's big money to be made, there's always wrongdoing. And there are people out there taking money somewhere on the table today that haven't been caught yet because there's too much money bet on every game. And that's the thing that I don't like to see. I wish they would never print in the paper a score, a line score of college game. And, you know, that's wrong, but yes, it's there. And yes, when you have gambling, when you have money to be made, you have wrongdoing. And that's just kind of the way it is in our society. To me, that when you catch a person that would throw a game, would fix a game, to me, a life sentence is really not enough. It should be put away for life or whatever. And to me, I would even go stiffer than that, because to me, this game is great to me. And the people that play it, play within the rules, shouldn't be misled or deceived by someone throwing a game or fixing a game for a to make a few bucks.
What role do you think big-time athletics plays at a university? There are people who say it really shouldn't have any role in a university setting, that if you want to have a what amounts to a minor league professional system, then set that up and get big-time athletics off the campus.
Well, number one, that's never going to happen. Athletics is big-time business. And the thing is, you have to accept that, understand that. There's no way that any university, if you want to be recognized to have the greatest English department, math department, science department, which is all about is education. We know that. But, you know, you're not going to get recognized for that. But you win a national championship. You win a national championship in football and basketball, if you go to the Final Four, right away people know about Minnesota. You can have the greatest doctors in the world here come out of this university, the greatest lawyers in the world. They'll be great lawyers, but they'll only be in Minnesota. But win a few basketball games or get into the Final Four, national TV, now you know not only in Minnesota, all over the country. Athletics, big time business, big money makers. And yes, I'm all about graduating young people. I'm always getting a quality education. But we got to understand, for me to keep my job, to be able to see that these young people get quality education, I have to win. And to win, a lot of time won't save your job. Now you got to not only win, but you got to make money. We have got to turn a profit in basketball to not only support basketball, but have to support the women's sport, the whole athletic department. In the last few years, like last year, we made over $6 million in basketball. We're the highest revenue producing basketball program in the Big Ten. And we have the highest ticket in the Big Ten. So now to say here, so I didn't say that people love me in Minnesota to a degree, as long as I win, I understand that. You know, that's false. You know, I understand my true friends. As I said to the governor last night, he's one of those guys I count on the top five, on my five fingers. That's really a true friend. It's all about winning. It's unfortunate, it's about winning. And it's not only about winning at our level, it's about making a profit. If I don't make profit, they're going to fire me and get someone else. Same thing in football. I've been through three football coaches at Minnesota. Those are great guys. The Wackers are great guys. Gooders are great guys. But they didn't win enough. That's why they're not head coaches here. And same thing with Clem Haskins someday. If I don't win enough, they'll replace me. It doesn't matter how many guys I graduate. And that is the sad part and kind of the upsetting part of college athletics day, because you can be a great guy and do a tremendous job in community. They want to do a better job in community. In my program, we try to do everything. Go to hospitals. We go to nursing home. We go out to junior high school. We speak there. All those things are tremendous. They're great for our community. And I love doing that. But you know what? When I don't put enough W's on the board, they'll probably just like the Gooders and the Wacker. It'd be someone else coaching basketball.
Should that be changed? Or is that just the way it's going to be forever?
It's what's going to be forever. It's never going to change. Anymore in college, I've been here 13 years, and I'm probably 5 or 6 years longer than most guys. The average coach will stay anywhere from 5 to 7 years. If you win, some people are happy. If you lose, they're unhappy. So it doesn't matter if you win them all, you lose them all. You're going to irritate some people. So now college coaches, it's like a revolving door. It doesn't matter if it's football. Your major sport is football and basketball. And our state here, it's hockey is a tremendous sport. But overall, you're talking about football and basketball program. So far this year in football, you look at, there's 10 major program are hiring 10 new coaches this year because the coaches didn't win enough. And that's kind of sad, but that's what's happened to us in the day in sports at the college level. And that's why I say it's kind of a sad day in sports.
University of Minnesota basketball coach Clem Haskins is our guest this first hour of our midday program. And if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 227-6000, 227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828, 227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to our first caller. Robert?
Hello.
Hi.
Let's see. You know, when the game is fairly evenly matched, don't you think it's a good idea that when you have a lead, you should take very few three-point shots, and if you're losing, you should take many?
Well, the thing you have to understand, Robert, is what's the strength of your ball club? If you don't have three-point shooters, you can't take three-point shots if you're behind or ahead. But the thing you try to do is get the best shot you possibly can. If you have a nice lead, the key then is controlling the clock. You talk about time, score, possession. If you got a nice 10 or 12-point lead in the last 4 or 5 minutes of the ball game, at that time, your clock become your opponent, not your enemy or your opponent, not the team you're playing. So then you got to know how to milk that clock, work that clock. And sometime you may have a nice two-point shot. If that's the shot you want, you take that. If you have a Quincy Lewis or Kevin Clark, if they get a good look as the clock wind down on that 5 or 6 seconds, you take that three.
You were a great shooter as a player. Is that something that you learned how to do, or did you just know how to do that, and the first time you hoisted one up, it went through, and you could always blast away from wherever you chose to shoot?
Well, you say that. I go back, just reflect back for a moment. The first shot I shot, I made my first shot. of about 50 feet.
Well, see, I knew this. I didn't know this.
No. But I threw it like a baseball. I had no idea how to shoot the ball, but I was playing at that time with a guy named Dave Robert that's really responsible for me being the player I am today, and a man that really was a great shooter, and I watched him, his technique later on. But the first shot I shot, I have that goal today, I banked it in from about 50 feet. From that point on, I started shooting every day with Dave Robert. I watched his technique and his form, and that's how I copied my style of shooting. He has tremendous form, but I never didn't have anyone to really break it down to me to show me how to shoot the basketball. Watching him and my first high school coach had great technique and form of shooting the basketball. That's why I became a great shooter.
And then what moves a player to the level of actually being able to execute? If it were just a function of form, you'd think everybody'd be able to learn how to do it properly, and then everybody would be equal, but that's not true.
That's not true. I think there are guys are born ready to shoot the basketball. And, for example, in our ball club, Quincy Lewis and Kevin Clark have tremendous wrists. They can really shoot the ball from 18 to 22 feet and pretty accurate. Miles Tolliver has a stiff wrist. He cannot make shots within 2 or 3 inches of the bucket. He's much better 12 feet from the basket than 2 feet from the bucket or 2 inches, and because his wrists are stiff. And the thing is, you wonder why. That's why everyone can't shoot the ball, and you work on those same techniques and form. But the thing in America today that I'm so disappointed in, we don't practice shooting enough jump shots. We are very good at finger rolling, going behind our back and work on dunks. We don't work on 12 to 15, 18 foot jump shot. Back when I played, there was not dunking, wasn't so popular as shooting the basketball. All I could do is catch and take one bounce, two bounce, and shoot it. That's why I became a good shooter. I never played with the basketball, finger roll, going behind my back. I just get it and shoot it.
Dietrich, your question, please.
I was at the Oregon game this other day, and I noticed the lack of playing and players like Karen Simmons. And I was wondering how his playing time will be come next few games and on to the year, and then also who your probably your 5, 6, or 7 guys towards the end of the season when everybody has experience, who they'll probably be.
Well, you know, this time here, we're just trying to fill everybody out and see what we have. You know, sometimes your guess is good as mine. Until guys really play, you really don't know. Practice is one thing. We have a group of guys we want to play in practice. There's some guys are much better in games, believe it or not, than practice. So only way you're going to know that, you got to put them in the game. So that's why I play a lot of players early in the year to try to get a feel how well they're playing the game against competition. And also you have starters, and you have guys who play in between, and you have finishers. And so those thing, you only know that until you play guys in games. So, and that's why we kind of look a little ragged early in the year, and the score is kind of lopsided, maybe one half, until we settle down on the right rotation. And we're as a coaching staff, and we're trying to get a feel, and also the player trying to get a feel for each other. But between now and the next 10 or 15 basketball game, we'll settle down on a 9-man, 10-man rotation, and the starter will get to 28 to 32 minutes, and my 6 through 10 guys will play anywhere from 12 to 24 minutes.
What's it like being on the sideline during a close game? I would think it would just tear you up. One of these real nail biters. How can you? Well, you don't just sit there quietly. Obviously, you're known for being more demonstrative than that. But how can you stand that?
It's really tough. As I explained to my player the other night, we were just talking. I have a lot of young players. We're all freshmen, sophomores. We don't have any juniors. In our junior class, we only have 4 seniors. So we're basically, our nucleus is really is a young group of young people. It's great in one sense, but it hurt and going through the growing pains. It's the most difficult thing in the world to sit there as a coach, and all you do is rehearse or practice, and you hope sooner or later the things you work on in practice, and they remember those things that kick in the game. And as I said to my players, I was a player, I controlled the game. I could control the game when I played it. I knew what the coach wanted and get it done for him as a scorer, as a guard, whatever position I play. But now as a coach, you can't do that. You can sit there and tell those guys and show them in practice and teach them. But when the game starts, it's up to them to execute. That gets really nerve-wracking and pretty tough in the game. But I tell you what, the rewards you get, though, I think the rewards are greater than coaching, than really than playing. like I say, because if you sit there and you put 10 guys or 15 guys out there in October 17th, like we started practicing, and see it all come together, and like in a second half, and watch our execution run certain plays, and guys get to a certain spot, and that's the reward you get as a coaching, and see young people come in as inexperienced, and they don't have the physical makeup, have no knowledge of how to play, and see them begin to grasp the game, and get to understand the game of basketball, and how to go about putting together a winning drive, winning effort. That's reward you get to coaching. That's a little more rewarding, really, than coaching. But meantime, the way you sat there, very nerve-wracking.
John, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. I wanted to tell Coach Haskins how much people love him in Campbellsville, Kentucky. I saw a friend of mine I hadn't seen in decades. He was from Campbellsville. He told me that I told him that I was living in Minnesota. The only thing he said to me was, if you ever see Clem Haskins, tell him I said hello. His name's Phil Allen Bertram.
Phil's one of my attorneys. Thank you.
Yeah.
And John, what's your last name?
Curry.
Curry, okay.
All right, thanks for the call, John.
Yeah.
John, thanks so much for calling and everything. I really appreciate that. And you touched up on something, John. It's amazing that all the time that my travel and growing up, and, you know, Minnesota really was not a state that that we even discussed or talked about a lot. But in the last 13 years, it's amazing how many people that I know that are from, say, from Kentucky as a whole and from my hometown that lives in Minnesota. So we have so many things in common now, and so many people that always, that in my travel, have a story to talk about Minnesota. So it's a great state. We have great people here.
How have you been treated here in Minnesota? Dennis Green, coach of the Vikings, who is also a black man, has complained from time to time about what he perceives to be racism in the media and among some of the fans and so on. Have you encountered the same thing?
Well, not really. Racism is well alive in Minnesota as well as all over the country. People have a way of hiding that and sugarcoating that. But, you know, when you've been like myself, I've been through it all, I've seen it all, and that's why I say your real true friends, you have them come on one hand, and you probably have a few fingers left. So I understand that, and I learned how to deal with that. My thing, as long as I know you're my enemy, I know I can't trust you, I can still deal with you and relate to you. We still work and have a working relationship, as long as I know. But here sometimes it's hard to distinguish who can you trust, who you cannot trust. As a whole, I trust very few people to begin with. So you got to earn that respect from me, and over a period of time I get that. My 12 years plus in Minnesota, it's been excellent. I cannot sit here and tell you it's been a bad experience. It's been a great experience. My first 2 years in Minnesota was very, very difficult. At times, trying to win basketball games is like any time you go in a situation, you get hate mail. You get hate mail because you're a coach. You get ugly letters because you're a black individual. That happens from time to time. We still have ignorant people in our country today. People are still very sick, and they're very racist. You know, that happened to me, yes, my first few years here. I still have those letters in my box, and someday I will publish all those letters, and I hope I'll be able to find out a few of those names. But that's there, and it's always there. And that will surface from time to time. When you have an incident with a fight incident or anything that people don't agree with, it's just enough to push them over the edge to write or to call. And yes, we live in a very, very racist society, and it's still here in Minnesota as well in Kentucky and all over the country. I wish that I wouldn't have to say those things, because I grew up in a very racist society. And I was the first black to go to Campbellsville, Taylor County, the first black to go to Western. I've heard all the names that you can be expected. I've heard every call. So now guys give me those calls, say those things. You know, I can learn to deal with that. That don't bother me. I can deal with it. It hurts to know that we have people that are ignorant out there and that's sick would even say that or think that. And all I do is pray for them and hope they get their soul right before they die, because only one place they're going to go if they don't get right with God before they die.
Do you think in general society has made much progress on the race front, or just about where it's been for the long as you've been around?
You know, it's sad to say, but you know, one hand you think we've made a lot of progress, but in one other hand we have not. We got a lot of work to do there, and we talk about it every day. It's not getting any better. It's really sad to say that, and to see that we have in this state, as well as all states, segregation is going on. It's here, and it's sad to say that, but I just like to think that people sooner or later, through my voice, my being here and talking about it, they would get to act together and say, hey, we're going to change a society. We're going to try to do a better job in relationship with black as well as white in our community. We're not going to throw bricks through a black family moving a home, burn a cross in his yard, because we're bigger than that. We're better than that. We're over that. And those things happened decades ago, which shouldn't happen today.
University of Minnesota basketball coach Clem Haskins is our guest this hour. Again, if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 227-6000, 227-6000 in the Twin Cities. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828, and we'll get to some more callers in just a moment.
I'm Lorna Benson on the next All Things Considered construction of the International Space Station.
We're going to leave the confines of low Earth orbit, and Space Station is our stepping stone for that.
We'll get the story from the astronaut who will position the centerpiece of the space station in orbit, Minnesota native Bob Cabana. It's All Things Considered weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW FM 91.1 in the Twin Cities.
Speaking of Commander Cabana, an exclusive interview with him over the noon hour today here on our midday program, a Voices of Minnesota interview. Well, the balmy weather continues, sunny to partly sunny. That's the forecast for the state of Minnesota through the afternoon. Highs upper 30s in the north, low 60s in southern Minnesota on December the 2nd. Twin Cities, sunny and warm, with a high once again low to mid-60s. Right now, it is 52 and sunny in the Twin City metropolitan area. Clem Haskins, University of Minnesota basketball coach, is our guest this hour. And Twin City area number, if you'd like to join our conversation, 227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Kristen, your comment, please.
Yes, I had a question about the Oregon game on the other night. I was there, and the difference between how the players played in the first half and how they played in the second was phenomenal. I think that players, or that parents and teachers, would pay dearly to know how you can change players from in 15 minutes during halftime from the team they played the first half to the team they played in the second half.
Well, I think it's Christian, thank you for your call. I really can't get into all the detail of things going at halftime, because things are said in a locker room or stay in a locker room. But most important thing, I think, get people to refocus and to concentrate on what they're supposed to be doing their job. And you got to remind them from time to time. As I say to young people, man is lazy, and you got to find a way to motivate him to play hard. You got to find a way to motivate him to get himself ready physically, mentally, to prepare for the job at hand. And we did not do that in the first half, but we're working with so many young guys, and it takes time, I think, for players to understand how to get themselves ready to play every ball game. And, you know, sometimes it takes a halftime speech to remind young people that, who should get the ball, where the ball should go, who should be shooting, etc. The most important thing, I think, if you have people with character, you have young people with character in class, and soon later it will show. And the last few ball games, our character showed in the second half by doing a great job.
Would you describe yourself, Coach, as a yeller?
No, I'm not a yeller. I think I'm a no-nonsense person. I think I have, try to think I have great respect for my players. What I say, they listen and they hear to that and get themselves going. I don't like to yell a whole lot. I like to be very calm on the sideline. I think I do my, if any word yelling goes on, and very little of that is practice. I think if you prepare in practice, the games are a reward, and it should be easy. And to me, if you don't prepare in practice, you're not going to be able to execute in the game. That's why we win. You don't get lucky and win games if you prepare for the opportunities. If you prepare for the opportunity, when you get that, it equals success. We prepare in practice to have a success, and that's why we win late game situations.
You are known as a pretty tough disciplinarian. Are we, in general, too easy on our young people, you think?
No doubt about it. The problem we have in our society now, sometimes as mom, as dad, as parents, we love our offspring so much that we forget that we're cheating them if we don't discipline them. And that's why we have a good ball club in Minnesota. It's always going to be there. Never going to change. The discipline is going to be there. And I say to my son and my daughter growing up, like my dad told me, you do as I say, because I've been your age, I've been mine. That's kind of tough. And I don't believe in giving 14, 15-year-old youngsters opportunity to tell mom and dad what to do. I made all decisions for my kids growing up. And I think I made the right decision. My dad made the right decision for me. And I think if parents would take that approach, and to me, I'm Coach Haskins, Mr. Haskins. I want that respect. I've earned that respect. There's nothing wrong with saying yes, sir, and no, sir, and please and thank you. And I think we go back in our society, we won't have many problems in our school system. We would make it much easier for our teachers. We as parents are making it very, very difficult for our teachers because we're not doing a job we should be doing in the home to discipline our sons and daughter. So when they get to the classroom, they know how to act and keep themselves in the seat and be quiet because we're putting the pressure on the teacher, and it starts in the home.
When you go out and try to recruit players, do you run into some resistance given that attitude?
No, people basically know. I think as long as you're up front with people, you have no problem. I think young people are just dying for discipline. I think they want it. And you're going to get your share of people. And if you don't get a guy who wants to be disciplined, you don't need him in the first place. So, you know, you can't win with him. And so we don't recruit the guys that don't want to come in a program, in a discipline program. Every parent, every coach we recruit is going to tell him, this is the way we run our system in Minnesota. We're not going to change. If you adjust to that, you'll be happy. If not, you should go someplace else where you go run a game, do what you want to do. But can't do it in Minnesota.
Bill, your question for Coach Haskins?
Mr. Clem Haskins. I better call you Mr. Clem now.
You can call me Clem, sir, if you got a certain age. If you're over 50 years of age, you can call me what you like.
Well,
if you're a teenager, son or daughter, it should be Mr. Clem. You're right.
I'm over 50, but I have
you can call
been,
me Clem.
I have been following you from day one that you started at Minnesota, and I just want to congratulate you on such a great job you've done. You've given me a lot of exciting moments, and, you know, also, I think you'd be a pretty good actor, the way you handle yourself on the sidelines, too. I think you do a great job there, too, when you take that coat off. But my question is, Quincy Lewis, isn't this guy a can't-miss in the pros? The way this guy squares away to the basket, or squares up to the basket and shoots, I just think he's a fantastic shot, this kid.
Well, I agree with you. Quincy, you'll have an excellent chance to be a pro basketball player. And number one, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate you taking time to do that. Quincy Lewis has a chance to be a pro basketball player, no doubt about that. He just got to continue to work very, very hard, number one, on defense. And I second, he's got to push himself even harder because now he's a scorer and one of my leading players and stay out of foul trouble. He has a tendency to pick up, we call him, no-nonsense fouls. He shouldn't go out and get those picky fouls by reaching and kind of like put his hand in a cookie jar too much and shouldn't put it in there from time to time. So most important thing, though, he just got to stay out of foul trouble. And I agree with you. I think he had an excellent chance to be a pro because depending on how we finish up a year, how high he will go in the draft. But I got a great high hopes that he will be a great pro.
Should more young people who are really good basketball players but perhaps not all that interested in academics, should there be some kind of a program for them to go play minor league basketball for a while and learn their skills?
I don't agree with that. I hope it never happened. I think today that we really talk about education, we have not really, we talk about that. And you can take numbers and play with them, and they come out any way you want to. Like I'm talking about graduation rate in college, we don't get the credit we deserve because what happened to you in graduation, for example, they took a 5-year survey. If those guys graduate in 6 years, 7 years, you don't get credit for that. Like our ratio would be around 80% if we could go back and pick up all the guys that graduated. What happened to guys that come out of college, like my players, for example, Quincy Lewis should graduate in winter quarter, so he wouldn't have a chance to go to spring quarter. But if he stay in school this spring, for example, that the pro camps for the real good players, they got 3 weeks, they'll go to three different camps. And you can't afford to miss 3 weeks of classes. So I have my guys to drop out in the spring because I don't want to flunk those classes. They always have a chance to come back and graduate, but you don't always have a chance to be an NBA player. You only have a short window there from age of 20, basically up to 26, 27. If you don't get there by that time, chances are you won't make it. You have your life to come back and get a degree. So that's what we encourage our players to do. For example, the Jason Walton, the Richard Coffey, the Melvin Newbern, the Bob Martin. Martin. All those guys did not graduate in their 4 years. We got no credit for those guys graduating, but they all have a degree today. And to me, my job as a coach is to make sure my players stay on target to get a degree. And that's what myself, I feel good about that. They may not graduate in 4 years, but are they in a position within a year, a quarter semester to graduate? And all our players, like the Willie Burton, still trying to play pro basketball, need 18 hours to graduate. He can do that really in one quarter, at least in two quarters. So less than a year, he can finish college. And basically, all our players that don't graduate in 4 years has a chance to finish in one quarter or one semester now, when they should go in semesters, or less than a year's time. And that's, to me, what a coach is all about. So I'm just as proud of my guys, like the Ray Gaffneys, the Kim Zerkers, the Chicken Janskys. You never hear about those guys. They're making a good living, working Honeywell, Procter & Gamble, et cetera, around the country, and making a decent living. My job as a coach, not only to put guys in NBA, but be successful in our society and our community. We have a lot of guys being very successful in our community.
Do you think there are a fair number of Kevin Garnetts out there who we don't never hear about? Guys who really can play very well, but they don't go to college for whatever reason and kind of get lost in the shuffle?
They don't get lost in the shuffle. Kevin Garnett is a rare breed. He was born to play basketball. He was not born to be president of the United States. He's born to be a great basketball player, and regardless with or without college. But see, he's just one of many. You read about Kevin Garnett, all his success as the biggest contract in the NBA. But see, you never talk about those guys that don't make it. See, that's what people need to publicize, the guys that don't make it. Talk about some other guys that don't make it. There are another, for every one guy, there's another 300 or 400 out there that don't make it. They're on the streets. You know, they're back to selling drugs or pushing drugs or doing something wrong or in prison that didn't make it because they dream of being a pro basketball player. That's why that I would not be for a league. They need to go to college with or without a degree. You bet off going to college. Everybody gets so wrapped up in getting a degree. We all want to get a degree. Our most successful people in all our corporations in this Twin Cities are C-plus students. Everybody think everybody got to be an A student. No, no, no. Our C-plus student, a B amount of students, are the most productive people. They're the president. They're the vice president of a corporation, not the three-point guys. If you've been a three-point guy, a four-point guy all your life, you don't understand adversity. You can't deal with adversity. You want the guy that understands when he gets knocked down how to get up. The guy never been knocked down. He don't understand if he ever get knocked down. He'll jump off the cliff on you. But that guy been knocked down. He know how to survive. And that's why I say the guys in our program, we teach a survival skill.
Mm-hmm. Bob, your question, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Coach Haskins. Could you address your philosophy on coaching the younger kids? I've been coaching younger kids from second up through seventh grade, and I'm a real stickler for the fundamentals and proper shooting form, and they all want to come out and slam out those three-pointers, but I just can't see them doing that. And also, I'd rather play all the kids than try for a win at that younger age. I'm just wondering what your philosophy is as you see your players come up, you know, to your level.
Well, Bob, I think we have the same philosophy. I mirror your ideas. I tell you, we need more people talk about teaching the kids the basic fundamentals and giving everybody a chance to play. And not to zone, play man-to-man defense and teach them how to play good man-to-man defense and work on the fundamentals of shooting the basketball and doing it the right way. What happened once we throw it up, we get everything out of sync. We want to win. You don't play everybody. You only play your best five players. Okay, when our fans come to the game, I get more boos, I'm sure, and more criticism because I go to the bench. People don't realize guys physically can't play but X amount of minutes. If you play the way we want to play, fatigue gonna set in. So I would suggest to you keep doing what you're doing, work on the fundamentals, play all the kids, and after every game, and particularly when you lose, you make sure you get them two dips of ice cream when you lose. But make sure if you win, you buy them one. But when you lose, you buy them two dips of ice cream, and you reward them the same. See, too many coaches, too many parents put too much pressure on their son, their daughters, about winning. And when you're not winning, they're rewarding. You reward those when you lose more than when you win.
Back to the phones. Bob, you're next.
Yeah, hi, Coach Haskins. I think you've done a great job here in Minnesota. And I have a bit of a follow-up to the previous question about fundamentals. As I've watched Joe Prisbella, I've been impressed that for a freshman, he seems to have fairly good fundamental skills. And I was curious how you plan to develop that, and also if you would ever have him watch tapes of Bill Walton, who I thought was really a great fundamental center.
Well, we should note, first of all, Coach Haskins, for people who don't follow game all that closely. Brisbello was the Mr. Basketball in Minnesota last year from Monticello, and now he's a freshman in your program.
Yeah, Joe Brisbello from Monticello, Minnesota, an excellent basketball player. He has good fundamentals now. He just needs strength, and he continued to work on his fundamentals to get even better. But, you know, you make a good comparison there of Bill Walton. In my coaching, I've been in coaching now 20 years. I've returned in the late 70s from pro basketball. He's, without a doubt, is a true center. He's the best center I've ever coached and the best passer I've ever coached at this position at this time. And I think he has great upside and great potential. He just needs to work on his low post moves so he'd be able to score a little more around the basket, and that will come in due time.
Mm-hmm. In general, Minnesota basketball, is it high school basketball? Is it, where does it fit in the big scheme of things? Pretty good, okie doke, not so good?
Well, when I started, not so good. Matter of fact, it was zero, no players. But now we have a lot of quality players in our state, a lot of players. We re-signed two players in Michael Bauer from Hastings, an outstanding young man. He's going to be a tremendous basketball player, great student athlete. Shane Schilling from Minnetonka, an outstanding athlete. He'll be a nice player in our program. Those two guys are the top two players in the whole country from Minnesota. When I started, I didn't ever think I'd see the day. I was hoping that we'd have a day that we'd have those guys. A guy like Joe Prisabella, he's one of the top centers in the country from Minnesota. We have Dusty Reichhardt, the guys are walking our walk-on, doing a great job. Mitch Onstead doing a tremendous job from Owatonna, Onstead in our program. Mitch Onstead from Faribault in our program, doing a great job. John Arney is another walk-on in our program. That's a 7-foot guy. Is doing an excellent job. With Greg Halbert from White Bear, people don't know about him, but he's going to be a big-time player in a couple of years. He's a great shooter. And Wade Joe can play inside, and Antoine Brock's improving. Kyle Sandin is coming on. We got another big guy, Ryan Willenberg, Moore's coming in. So we have some big guys. We need outside shooting. So what I'm trying to say, we have some quality players in our state, and we have in our sophomore classes some of the best players in the country. So we're looking forward to keeping all those good players home, and I tell you what, it makes it much easier for us to recruit. And also, I'm driven to win a national championship, and I want to do that, but we can do that because we have players in our state. It's very difficult to beat Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio for the Illinois and those players in those states. Now we produce them in our state. We just might, most important thing is keep them home.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of time left, but let's get at least one more caller on here. John?
Yeah, I'm a 55-year-old guy, and I just want to tell Clem that I went to Western Kentucky State 1 year, and I saw him play as a sophomore. And I was always so impressed with the way you come down that floor. You are in charge of the ball game when you're out there, but you're always looking to set the other guy up. And you're looking at the whole floor, not just getting your shot. And I think that's really something that you can teach people, and I hope you keep on going at it. One other thing I wanted to bring up, it was talk a little bit about racism. Now, I'm a blonde-haired and blue-eyed guy, but as a kid, my family moved around to a lot of different small communities, and we weren't too well off. And most of these communities didn't have any visible minorities, you know, as far as blacks or Hispanics or Indian or whatever. But what people don't understand about racism, and I think Clem probably understands it. He says it's worldwide. It is worldwide, and it's a structural thing. Because in my experience, if they didn't have a brown guy or a black guy or an Indian guy to kick around, they took the next one in line, the next one available, and that happened to be me in most cases. And, you know, there was the same abuse, the same belittling, the same physical threats and assaults, the whole thing, in place after place. And eventually I learned how to deal with it, how to fight back, and how to take out the ringleader, and, you know, I handle it after a point, but it took a long time.
Well, John, thank you for those comments. We appreciate that. You're 100% right. And the thing is that I need to get you and talk to my players sometime about that. You know, everybody assumed I was a great scorer. I didn't pass the basketball, but I led my team in assists every year, too. So those are things that are very important, is not only being able to score, but see the whole floor. And the thing you mentioned, maybe I come on the program again, we'll discuss those later, on race relationship things.
More fun to play college or pro basketball for you?
College basketball is fun. Okay, pro basketball is a job. You know, that's a job, and you're making money, and they're paying you to play. And as I tell my players, the fun time you'll have is in college. And once you get to the next level, you're making a living to play basketball, and that's a job.
Mm-hmm. Bob, your question, please.
Coach, I'd like to ask your opinion of gender equity at the university regarding basketball. My wife and I attend the women's games, and there are no cheerleaders, there are no band, and yet there seems to be all of that for the men, and I just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Well, number one, I don't know. That surprised me. I didn't know they didn't have cheerleaders over there, the band, not at the women's game. That's something I'll look into because, you know, they deserve to have that. They deserve the same thing that men get. And most of the time they get as much or more. And I'm surprised they're not there. So I'm not, maybe just went to a game. It could have been off that evening. But I'll check into it just in case I'm on the show next time. We'll find out why.
Okay. Brian, quick question.
Yeah, hi, Coach. Thanks for taking my call. We've all been pretty lucky here in Minnesota to watch everything that you've been able to do with the University of Minnesota. But you've done a lot more outside with like coaching in the Goodwill Games and so forth. And I was hoping you could share some of those experiences with us and how you've been able to use those experiences back here at the University of Minnesota coaching that team.
Well, Brian, thank you so much. I've been very, very fortunate, like I say, and I believe in God strongly, and He's the guy that directs my life each and every day. And to be able to coach the international, you know, junior national team, to the gold medal in Argentina, the Olympic team, 96 Olympic team, the assistant coach, working with a great guy like Lenny Wilkins, with a great honor. And this past summer, like you say, to win the gold for the Goodwill team, the first time he won a gold medal in over 12 years, since 86, I believe. Those are great honors, but you know, you have people that recognize the job you're doing and appreciate that. And also, USA Basketball voted me the Coach of the Year, so that was another great honor. But you know, to make it possible, it takes players, it takes people, and it takes a loving, understanding wife and a family to bring it all together. So it's not only Clem Hanskin to share all those awards, but the people makes it possible. All the trophies I received in 97, I keep them at the gym because I don't feel personally that they're Clem Hanskin's. I think the public, you, all the fans deserve to see those trophies. You helped me win those trophies. You know, yes, it's a great award, but my players, my staff, the wonderful fans at Wims Arena, that's why they stay in a trophy case there, because I want everybody to see those trophies, let you know I appreciate you being there, supporting us to make it possible.
Are you going to end up as the coach of the U.S. Olympic team, 2000 team?
I can't comment on that at present time. I keep saying I don't want to do it. I've had enough. I need to take some summers off. But my philosophy is simple. I think if I'm the best man available, if that's the guy they want for my country, I would do it. But I'd rather somebody else to do it, as we sit and talk today. 2 years from now, I may get a little more energy and feel better. I got to go through some knee operation maybe this summer, the following summer. If I get it taken care of this summer, then if I'm well and able to do it, if I'm the best man for the job, then I would consider it.
Michael Jordan, is he the greatest player in the history of the game, do you think?
In the time of kids today, in my lifetime, no. You know, you can't beat Oscar Robertson, Jerry West, and Elgin Baylor. I don't think any player has ever come down the pike, including Michael Jordan, to do the things those guys could do. He's a little more exciting, more athletic, but in terms of being able to do the job, people don't realize this. Oscar Robertson averaged a triple-double for 80-plus basketball games, 30 points, 10-plus rebounds, 10-plus assists. I don't think Michael Jordan came close to that yet. He's been a great player, but he hasn't been close to Oscar Robertson yet.
So the Big O, number one?
I got Big O and Jerry West, the greatest guards ever played a game of basketball. And I think pound for pound, Elgin Baylor is the greatest player, one of the greatest players to ever play. You can put him in one position, you want to put him one through five. Nobody even close to Bill Russell and Wilk as centers. Bill Russell, of course, his record speaks for itself. The greatest winner of all time. College undefeated 2 years in a row. I believe won 60 ball games in a row at San Francisco in college, two national champion. Go to Boston Celtics, win 11 out of 13 NBA title. There'll be never be another athlete to touch that record.
Do you have a favorite Gopher player that you've coached?
It's not fair. I could never say that because all my guys are very dear to me and close to me. I could not pick out one guy. I said to guys from time to time, Cornell Lewis is maybe a guy I want to take fishing with me. Okay, he's a guy, great. He's a minister, ordained minister. I love his company, being around Cornell Lewis. The fishing, the play to win a game, Willie Burton, you had to ask to take the last second shot.
Are you going to stay here until you retire?
I'll retire from coaching from here. I've been offered many, many jobs at the other college, at the NBA level. I could write my ticket right now, take an NBA job. I could go to another college job, make a lot more money. But I will retire in Minnesota from coaching. There are some other things I want to do with my life before I quit hanging up. But for the coaching aspect of it, I will never coach the NBA. I will never coach there. I will never coach another college job. I enjoy Minnesota, and I'll retire from coaching Minnesota.
Clem Haskins, thanks so much for coming in today.
It's my pleasure being here, and all the wonderful fans out there, I really appreciate your great support of me as a head coach of Minnesota, and also not only basketball, but for the whole athletic program at the University of Minnesota. We appreciate your support.
Thanks so much for coming in. University of Minnesota basketball coach Clem Haskins joining us on this first hour of our midday program. Thanks to all of you who've been with us this hour, especially those of you who called in, tried to call in with your questions or comments. And over the noon hour today, we're going to hear from Minneapolis native Bob Cabana, who is commanding the Endeavour space station mission that launches tomorrow. Right now, it's time for the Writer's Almanac.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 2nd of December, 1998. Napoleon Bonaparte had himself crowned Emperor of France at Notre Dame in Paris on this day in 1804. He put the crown on his own head. It was on this day in 1823, President James Monroe, in his annual message to Congress, spelled out the Monroe Doctrine, in which he warned European powers to keep their hands off North and South America. It's the birthday in Paris, 1859, of the French painter Georges Seurat, the founder and leader of the neo-impressionist style called pointillism, in which colors are mixed optically that would have been conventionally mixed on the palette, tiny dots of paint that gives a shimmering effect to the eye. It's the birthday of Charles Ringling in McGregor, Iowa, in 1863, who formed a circus with his six brothers. They bought out the Barnum and Bailey Circus in 1907 and became the leading circus of their day. It was on this day in 1867, novelist Charles Dickens gave his first reading in New York City. People stood in two lines, nearly a mile long, waiting to buy tickets. It's the birthday of Ruth Draper in New York City, 1884, who had a career that lasted four decades, performing dramatic monologues that she wrote herself, in which she played multiple characters with a bare minimum of props. It's the birthday of Greek writer Nikos Kazantzakis, born in Heraklion, Crete, 1885, who wrote Zorba the Greek. He wrote, "Beauty is merciless. You do not look at it, it looks at you and does not forgive." It's the birthday in 1906 in Budapest, Hungary, of engineer Peter Carl Goldmark, who developed the first commercial color television system and the long-playing phonograph record, both for CBS Laboratories in the early 1950s. It was on this day in 1942, on a squash court at the University of Chicago, the first controlled, self-sustaining nuclear chain reaction took place on a reactor built by a team led by physicist Enrico Fermi. And today is the birthday of novelist and short story writer T. Caragason Boyle, Thomas John Boyle, in Peekskill, New York, 1948, author of Water Music and The Road to Wellville. Here's a poem by Tom Wayman, entitled Bosses. The boss who stands behind you, watching you work. The boss who insists, "I'm sure I told you to do that." The boss who, after you've made nine trips carrying an extra heavy load of boards, sees you walking with a light load and tells your foreman to order you to work harder. The boss who commands you to look busy.